Chapter 20 Big Sicuti Island. They had just cleared the island's southern coastline when Sam realized Rivera's gunfire had caused more than cosmetic damage. The rudder pedals felt spongy, and the collective and cyclic were sluggish, responding to his commands with a slight delay.
"What do you think?" Remy asked, her face pressed between the seats.
"Hydraulics, maybe." He scanned the gauges, looking for oil pressure, temperature, revolutions per minute. "Engine's running a little hot, too, and the oil pressure looks dodgy."
"What's that mean?"
"Nothing good."
"How far to the beach?"
3 miles, give or take."
"We should assume Rivera isn't giving up."
"I agree. Whether they call someone and how fast they respond is the question.
Or how fast they can get the rinkers working again."
"True. Let me see if I can get her settled down." Carefully, Sam worked the controls, dropping both altitude and speed until they were 100 feet off the water and moving at 60 knots, roughly 70 miles per hour. Below them, the sea was flat, calm, and black, save the reflection of the helicopter's navigation strobes. Remy said,
"Sam, they'll be able to track the lights."
"Lights or no lights, they're tracking us through the big eyes. Once we cross the beach, I'll switch them off. Against the backdrop of the land, we'll be invisible."
"You're assuming they'll come after us?"
"Have to." He did a quick scan of the gauges. "The engine temperature's come down a little bit, but the oil pressure is still hinky. The controls are still soft."
"Hydraulics, then?"
"At the very least. Any one of those can put us in the drink. All we need is another 4 minutes or so."
"And a non-crash landing," Remy added.
"And that." Slowly through the windshield, they could see Africa's east coast turn from a dark smudge to identifiable bits of landmass. Trees, white sand beaches, rolling hills, and rivers and streams zigzagging across the terrain. A half mile from the beach, Sam felt the cyclic jerk in his hand, followed by a thump bang above their heads. The cockpit and cabin began shaking. An alarm shrieked. Yellow and red lights flashed.
"That's a tad ominous," Remy said with a tight grin.
"Just a tad," Sam agreed. "Grab a hold of something. It's going to get bumpy." He lifted the collective and dropped the nose, pushing the helicopter past 80 knots. Through the windshield, he saw the shoals slip beneath the fuselage, then the beach, then the black green of the forest. He reached forward and flipped off the navigation strobes. "There's a big sandbar ahead on the riverbank," he called. "Think you can manage the bell?"
"Define manage."
"Shove it out the door."
"That I can do. What's the plan?"
"I hover. You, the guns, our packs, and the bell get off on the sandbank."
"And you?"
"I'm going to put down in the river."
"What? No, Sam."
"You said it yourself. They're coming after us. If we can ditch this thing, they'll have nowhere to start looking."
"Can you do it?"
"If I can get the rotors shut down quickly enough."
"More ifs," Remy replied. "I'm beginning to hate ifs."
"This'll be the last one for a while."
"Uh-huh. I've heard that before."
"When you're on the ground, find the thickest tree trunk around and get behind it. If the rotors don't spool down enough before she flips over, they'll tear free and turn into shrapnel."
"Flip over? What do you mean?"
"Helicopters are top-heavy. As soon as she touches the water, she's going to roll."
"I don't like this."
"The sandbar's coming up. Get ready."
"You're infuriating, you know that?"
"I know." Remy mumbled a half-curse under her breath, then turned around and released the tie-down ratchets around the crate. She crab-walked around it, braced her back against the bulkhead and her legs against the crate, and shoved it across the deck until it bumped up against the door. "Ready," she called. Sam bled off airspeed and altitude until they were 30 feet off the sandbar and crawling ahead at 15 knots. The helicopter was wobbling now. The earlier thump-bang had settled into an ominous 3-second cycle that shook the fuselage from stem to stern.
"It's getting worse," Remy said.
"We're almost there." Sam eased the helicopter downward a foot at a time.
"Check the distance," he asked. Remy slid the cabin door halfway open and poked her head out.
20 feet. 15. 10.
Can you make that? Sam asked.
I may be well past my gymnastics days, but I can still do 10 feet blindfolded.
Sam flipped on the hover coupler. He took his hands off the controls. The helicopter lurched sideways, quivered, dipped, then steadied itself.
Okay, go, Sam called. Give me a wave when you're down and safe.
Remy Hunch walked forward, stuck her head between the seats, kissed him, said good luck, then walked back and shoved the door the rest of the way open.
Try to miss the skids, Sam said.
Remy put her shoulder to the crate, took a deep breath, and shoved. The crate tumbled through the opening and disappeared. The guns went next. Remy gave Sam a final glance and jumped out. 10 seconds later, Sam spotted her farther up the sandbar. She gave him a thumbs up and dashed off into the darkness. Sam counted to 60 to give her time to find cover, then grabbed the collective. He disengaged the hover coupler and seized the cyclic. He dipped the nose slightly and let the rotor blade's pitch angle ease him across the sandbar and over the river. When he reached a section that was both wide and deep enough for his purposes, he pulled the nose up and worked the collective into a hover. He took one final look around. Once the helicopter submerged, the interior would be black. With no visual reference points, he'd have to escape by feel alone. He checked his seatbelt to ensure he knew how to unhook it, then studied the cabin door latch, then rehearsed his movements in his mind's eye. He lowered the collective ever so slightly and felt the helicopter drop. He pressed his face against the door window. The skids were about 5 feet off the water. Close enough. Any closer, Sam feared, and he'd have a zero margin for error.
Here goes everything, Sam muttered.
He released the cyclic, shut off the engines, pulled the collective up to its stops to slow the blades, and grabbed the collective again. Sam felt his belly shoot into his throat. With a crash, the helicopter struck the surface. He was thrown forward against the restraints. He felt the helicopter tipping right, thought, collective, and he jerked the control to the left. The effect was immediate. With the blades already fully pitched, the rotor assembly responded to Sam's command by angling to the left and shifting the helicopter's center of gravity. Water rushed up the windshield, horizontally at first, then diagonally as the helicopter pitched sideways. Sam tucked his chin to his chest, grasped the restraints with both hands, and set his jaw. He felt a bone-shaking jolt. White light burst behind his eyes. Then nothing. He awoke, coughing. Water filled his throat. He jerked his head back, sputtered again, and forced his eyes open. Seeing only blackness, he felt a moment of panic. He squashed it, forced himself to breathe. He reached out, fingers extended, until he touched something solid. The tip of the cyclic. Gravity was pulling his head to the left. The helicopter was lying on its side. The river hadn't been deep enough for the helicopter to completely capsize. That was the good news. The bad news was that he could hear water gushing into the cabin behind him. Already the level had reached his face.
Move, Sam, he muttered.
He extended his right arm up, felt the upholstery of the passenger seat, and kept groping until his fingers found the safety belt. He latched on, then dipped his left hand beneath the water and punched the release button on his restraints. He fell sideways, then brought his free hand up, joined it with his left hand, and chinned himself from the water until his knees reached the gap separating the cockpit from the cabin. Toes pointed, he shoved his legs through the opening and stretched to his full length until his feet touched the cabin's bulkhead. He let go of the restraints and slid the rest of the way into the cabin. Now that he was standing hunched over, the water was at his chest. He extended his arms upward, felt the cabin door, and traced its outline with his fingertips. Water was spurting through the seams. He found the latch, tested it with slight downward pressure. It seemed operable.
Deep breath, Sam told himself.
He sucked in a lung full of air, shoved the latch down, and slid the door open. Water crashed onto his head. He stumbled backward and slid beneath the surface. He let the waves shove him against the cabin wall, using the momentum to coil his legs beneath him. The pressure subsided. He kicked off, arms spread before him, hands grasping at the doorframe and pushing, feet kicking. His head broke the surface.
"Sam!"
he heard. Remy's voice. He opened his eyes and turned in the water, trying to get his bearings.
"Sam!"
she called again. He turned again, saw her standing on the bank waving at him.
"Dials!"
she yelled.
"What?" "Crocodiles! Swim!"
Sam did just that, pouring his last shred of energy into a sprint for the bank. He touched sand, shoved himself to his knees, then to his feet, then stumbled forward into Remy's arms. Together they slogged up the sand onto level ground before collapsing.
"Forgot about crocodiles," Sam said a couple minutes later.
"Me too. I spotted them in the shallows about 50 yards upstream. The commotion must have woken them up. Are you okay? Any broken bones?"
"Don't think so. How'd I do?"
Remy pointed toward the middle of the river. Sam focused on the spot, but it took several seconds for his eyes to adjust. All that remained visible of the helicopter was a branch-like shard of rotor blade jutting a half foot above the surface.
"The rest of the chunks went into the water."
"Just as I planned," Sam said with a weary smile.
"Planned?"
"Hoped. How's the bell?"
"Aside from a few cracks in the wood, the crate's surprisingly intact. I collected our packs and the guns. Let's find some cover in case we have visitors."